Good morning, everybody. I'm bringing to order our meeting of the for the Palm Beach Transportation Planning Agency. And it's Thursday, April 15th. It's 9 a.m. And I see Commissioner Marino joining us. That's terrific. I'm going to ask our council member from Boca Raton, Andy Thompson, to do our invocation this morning. Would everybody please rise?
Heavenly Father, we come before you today with bowed heads and humbled hearts, particularly me, knowing that I could never deliver an invocation quite as well as the esteemed Mayor Stephen Wilson. Nevertheless, we ask you for all, and we thank you for all the blessings you've given to us, recognizing that you've often been better to us than we've been to ourselves. We look forward to the chance that we have to conduct the people's business. We pray for wisdom, clarity, for humility, and lastly, for a humbled heart. We ask for all these things in your name. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Mayor, would you please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody. Can we have a roll call, please?
Sure. Okay, so at this time, I'm only asking those board members attending in person to respond by saying "here" when I call your name. I want to remind you to unmute your microphones by pushing the button on the base. When it's red on the top of your microphone, it means you're on. And alternates, please state your name if you are attending on behalf of a TPA board representative. Stephen Wilson is excused. Yvette Drucker?
Here.
Andy Thompson?
Thankful to be here.
Stephen Grant?
Present.
Shelley Petrolia?
Here.
Joelle Flores?
Present.
Jim Koretsky?
Present.
Christopher McVoy?
Present.
Joni Brinkman?
Here.
Catherine Waldron?
Here.
Chelsea Reed? Melissa McKinley?
Commissioner McBenhart on behalf of Commissioner McKinley.
Maria Marino?
Present.
Maria Sachs?
Here.
Greg Weiss?
Here.
Douglas Lawson? Michael Napoleon?
Here.
Christina Lambert?
Here on behalf of former Commissioner Corey Nearing.
For the record, for the board, that seat is just shown as vacant at the moment. So you're going to be in place of it until the city nominates a new person.
Thank you.
Joseph Peduzzi, Robert Weinroth.
Here.
Fred Pinto.
Jeff Maher here on behalf of Mayor Pinto.
We have a quorum in person, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay. I'm looking at my crib sheet and we're supposed to be now looking to see if anybody is online who would like to participate.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So I do have a script to read, so if you bear with me. So pursuant to state law, a quorum of the TPA board must be physically present at the advertised meeting site in order to conduct the meeting and take action as a body. However, additional members may participate remotely, provided that they have a significant circumstance that justifies their absence, with significant circumstance being reasonably determined by the physically present members. I will now read the list of members that have provided a brief explanation of the significant circumstance preventing their in-person attendance so that the board may determine if these members will be admitted into the meeting as virtual participants. Please note that voting members approved to participate remotely will be enabled to participate in debate, and also that they must vote unless they have documented a conflict of interest on a particular item. At this time, I only have Vice Mayor now, Chelsea Reed from Palm Beach Gardens. She did get a flat tire this morning and was unable to get here in time to participate in person, so she asked to participate remotely.
Okay. Are there any objections to Chelsea Reed's participation in this meeting remotely? Seeing none, I'm going to, without objection, allow her to participate. Is she on the line at this point?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Very good. All right. We're going to move on to general public comments. There are going to be three ways to provide public comments for this meeting. Written comments may be submitted online at the website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments may be made by virtual attendee using the raise hand feature in the Zoom platform, and verbal and written comments may be provided by in-person attendees. I ask you to submit a card and so that we will know who would like to be recognized. Staff, do we have any general comments received at this point in time?
It would help if I turn my microphone on. Yes, Mr. Chair. I do have one general public comment that was received. We received it online this morning. So if you bear with me while I pull it up, it was from Richard Stowe of Lake Worth Beach. So his comment is, a number of residents on Federal Highway and neighboring streets in Lake Worth Beach support replacing stop signs and traffic signals with a series of mini roundabouts, as well as implementing a 12-foot to 10-foot lane diet as part of two road resurfacing projects on Federal Highway, which is State Road 5, scheduled for fiscal year 2024. An attached letter by Michael Walwork, a former FDOT District 4 PE, offers detail on the mini roundabout design. Fiscal year 2024 resurfacing project boundaries are from 10th Avenue South to 6th Avenue North, south of Lake Ave. Many roundabouts should be considered for 1st, 2nd, 4th, 6th, 8th, and 10th Avenue South intersections. Many roundabouts are not suitable on the Lake and Lucerne one-way couplet. North of Lake Avenue to 5th Avenue North, State Road 5 includes a third 12-foot turning lane north of 2nd Avenue North traffic signal. The middle lane is also utilized by more aggressive drivers as a passing lane. Two rules apply to vehicular drivers utilizing many roundabouts: yield to vehicles in the roundabout, and with the exception of large trucks such as SU-30 and WB-50s, always turn right. The latter rule renders the left-hand turn lane useless. Installing a median with native shade trees in between many roundabouts in place of the left turn signal would be an ideal enhancement. This enhancement would also apply for a stretch of Federal Highway in College Park south of the C-51 Canal Bridge. A resurfacing project is scheduled for the section of Federal Highway from 6th Avenue North to Arlington Avenue in West Palm Beach for fiscal year 2025, and there is strong support for many roundabouts in this section of Federal Highway. Upon approving such a design, support also exists to determine if lowering speed limit to 25 miles per hour, where it is currently 35 miles per hour, is warranted within the project area. To enable the FDOT to carry out a study to evaluate the suitability of the above traffic calming safety improvements, we request that the Transportation Planning Agency identify and secure such funding.
Thank you, Ms. Pierce. There's a lot to unpack there. I think that we would be well served to have a copy of that distributed to members of the TPA. And of course, Commissioner McAvoy, do you have any comments, or do you want to just sort of study that before replying to that on behalf of the city?
Yes, I am familiar with the request. And I know that there's been work on Federal Highway in terms of soliciting public input through petitions. I don't think they've been submitted here yet, but yes, there's definitely interest in Lake Worth in considering ways of reducing the speeds going through there, particularly as there's already a fair amount of residential development multi-story along it and probably more anticipated. So it is a concern. I personally am agnostic on whether it has to be roundabouts or other forms, but the concept of road diet and something like that is, I would like to request that it be studied as part of this resurfacing.
All right, Nick, we'll distribute that to the members of the TPA and just maybe at some point in the future, again, address those comments from Mr. Stowe.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, if I could make a brief remark. Two points of clarification, and one encouragement. The clarification is Federal Highway in Lake Worth Beach is not US 1. So I just want everyone to be familiar with that. It's an unusual nomenclature because Federal Highway is normally the name given to the US route within a municipality, but in Lake Worth Beach, it's actually the State Road 5 corridor, which is a few blocks east of US 1 in Lake Worth Beach. The second is the encouragement. I want to encourage all of you as elected officials, when we tell you that DOT is going to be resurfacing a roadway within your jurisdiction, that is an opportunity for you to evaluate the potential for safety modifications that could be made to the roadway to enhance its usefulness to your local communities. And there are two resurfacing projects coming up that the state will be doing in Lake Worth Beach. And we are committed to working with the city elected officials and their staff to identify what enhancements can be included within those resurfacing projects. So that offer extends to every one of you as maintenance projects are happening within your jurisdictions. We want you to take note of those, engage your staff, reach out to us and the TPA staff, and we'll see what we can do to build better roads while we're maintaining them at the same time.
Thank you, Nick. Let the record show that Commissioner Peduzzi has joined us. Welcome, sir. I also would like to acknowledge we have two new members here today. The first, I just already recognized, Commissioner McAvoy from the City of Lake Worth. Welcome. And our second has already been here once as an alternate. She's now here as the appointee of the City of Boca Raton. Welcome, Council Member Drucker. Okay, it's now time for board members to have your say if you have any comments. So I'm going to ask you to, as new members, if you wish to be recognized, just put your name plate up and we'll try and recognize you. My vice chair, Mayor Grant, will help me identify people who are looking to be recognized. And I see to my left, Commissioner Marino has gotten her sign up first. So you are the first.
Good morning, all. Thank you. And I would encourage our new members to put your signs up and introduce yourselves so everybody could meet you on a formal basis. I know we're speaking about some dollars later on in the day about the trolleys and the substitution of money. But as a representative of Tri-Rail, I would like to bring up the fact that the Board of County Commissioners has sent a letter in support of Tri-Rail for repurposing some dollars for a planning study for the VA hospital and having a stop there. And if FDOT decides that they do not want to do that, I would like to ask the board to see if it would be possible if we could substitute the planning study, and maybe it'd be something that the TPA takes on. And the scope of work should not exceed $250,000, because that's what they're talking about right now in the way of dollars. So just put your thinking caps on about that, and like to see that happen, because Tri-Rail station at the VA hospital is something I think we could all use. And even though it might be a long ways off, at least we get the planning started. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm not seeing any other signs up. Oh, I'm seeing way in the corner there. Okay, Commissioner McAvoy.
Good morning, and thank you for being able the opportunity to participate. I was recently elected in Lake Worth, and in the past was also a commissioner of Lake Worth. Professionally, I am a soil scientist and hydrologist who came to Florida 25 years ago to work on Everglades restoration, and somehow decided I liked Lake Worth well enough that I got involved in governance in the city. I personally have a lot of interest in, obviously, environmental issues, but also transportation issues, safety issues in our community. So a couple comments in that direction. Just to reiterate very briefly, I would support an effort to study and hopefully incorporate some form of traffic calming on Federal Highway State Road 5 as part of the DOT project, to include many roundabouts and lane diets as possibilities with that. I looked at the video of the DDI Double Diamond interchange for 10th Avenue North. 10th Avenue North, as some of you may know, has a lot of foot traffic for students going to Lake Worth Middle School. And I'm very concerned, and we'll try and get in touch about how that works for foot traffic, because we certainly don't want to see accidents there. A street that's at the east end of that interchange is a long-standing issue for our city. And I had one other one that is escaping me at the moment. And obviously, I don't know about obviously, but I do have a long-standing interest in bicycle and foot transportation. Foot transportation within the city is very important to us. I happen to have done a lot of bike transportation around the county in the past. So those are my interests. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, and welcome to our group. I know there's been a very large change in the makeup of your city council, and we certainly are here to support you in your traffic needs, anything we can do. As far as the DDI, I know Council Member Thompson and Drucker may have some input to you because they're going to do that same configuration at Glades and I-95, and certainly they can probably give you the benefit of their thoughts as far as that. I'm going to recognize now Council Member Drucker, another new member of our happy group.
Thank you, Mr. Weinroth. So yes, my name is Yvette Drucker. I was appointed to council last October, but I won my election this past March. So this is my official, I'm official, I guess, now. I have a background in advocacy and nonprofit work. That's what I've done for the last decade for children and families. Transportation is something new to me, so I'm looking forward to learning. I want to thank Nick because he's really given me a good background on the TPA, and I'm looking forward to serving with this amazing group of individuals, and I'm happy to be here. So thank you.
Thank you. And we're very happy to have you here. Commissioner Marino, your sign's still up? Okay. Just want to make sure you didn't have second thoughts. All right. All right. And do we have any hands raised?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'll have some just brief remarks. As Nick was saying, we have opportunities when we're resurfacing roadways. In Boca Raton, where I'm sure you saw the news reports where a judge was killed in a very unfortunate accident, which I don't think can really be blamed on engineering. It was more a fact of an operator who is under the influence, probably, presumably. We certainly have heard from constituents from Boca Raton concerned about that roadway. And so I would look to both council members Drucker and Thompson to think about what's coming up for the resurfacing of A1A. And if there are some things that could be done to re-engineer and maybe bring those forward. I'll recognize you in a second, council member. Last meeting, we touched upon the issue of a dedicated funding source for transportation, and it was picked up by the press. And I think that it shows that there is at least interest in the subject. There may not be a groundswell of support for coming back behind the AIST with a penny sales tax for transportation. But I certainly think that it's going to be worthy of a conversation. So I think, Nick, you are going to schedule a workshop on that or a conversation so that we can start drilling down into the needs of transportation. Obviously, we see in the transportation secretary, Mayor Pete, having come out of a municipal assignment before becoming transportation secretary, understands the needs of municipalities. I think that's going to be a good thing. And with the dollars that are going to be spent to jumpstart our economy, we know there'll be requests for shovel-ready projects and other infrastructure opportunities. There are earmarks have come back. They're not called earmarks. I forget what they're calling them this week, but there are going to be opportunities for infrastructure projects. And I think we all need to be aware of that. And notwithstanding that, I think long-term, we're going to need a dedicated funding source for things like Tri-Rail, Palmtran, and infrastructure projects. So that's going to be certainly a fertile area for discussion going forward. And with that, I'll recognize my friend, Council Member Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, we did have a very unfortunate situation happen earlier this week with a traffic accident. And a woman was under the influence. She stated so, I believe. But Nick and I had actually discussed the potential for safety improvements on A1A. What, Nick, two or three months ago when we talked about the resurfacing project that's going to be happening there. And we're constrained somewhat by, me and Nick had talked in part about improvements to be made on the east side of the road, which A1A in Boca Raton is like one of the most bicycled roads in the city by far. It's a beautiful place to ride your bike, but it isn't necessarily the safest because it has a non-buffered bike lane on the east side that's not even that big. And Nick and I had talked about potential improvements that we could make there. We're constrained somewhat by the sea grapes that exist on that side. Of course, none of that actually dealt with what happened in this accident because the woman drove up onto the sidewalk on the west side of the road while going north. So actually drove around traffic. But there's probably some improvements that we could see made there as well. And I've been in contact, as I mentioned, with Nick and the TPA staff in order to see that we implement those as best we can, taking advantage of the fact that the road's going to be resurfaced. We might as well make it as safe as we can at the same time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Koretsky.
Thank you. Just a thought in hearing about Boca with A1A, you know, we're starting to hear 20 years ago or so in Jupiter, A1A was basically our A1A corridor was reconfigured to maximize. It's a two-lane road. We have on-road park, you know, off-road adjacent parking. We have bike lanes. We have pedestrians. We have joggers. We have, so for 20 years we've watched, we basically have built out, other than eliminating one of those, you know, people coming by car, bikers, runners, there just isn't. And we have sea grapes, which make it difficult, you know, for a on the sidewalk. So as population has grown, we've been getting more recently more comments from the public that we have to do something. It's not safe. And I've pondered about that because I would have to prohibit one of those from being there, which is not something at this point in time I'm ready to do. So we've done in the town, our police have done neighborly type of enforcement, right? Let's all get along here because we have a jewel. But lately I've been getting some suggestions, and since I have members of the county commission here, that if other parking could be created and there's county properties, that would be the only solution that I'm aware of. I just want to throw that out. But the picture you painted, we have exactly the same thing, you know, up in Jupiter. And it's a really fine balance that you have to make. So you have any ideas? I'm anxious what you might do in Boca, but the only option I see is other parking because we have this beautiful beach that people from all over the county and outside of the county come to visit. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
I see Commissioner Marino writing feverishly over here, so I'm sure she's going to follow up on those remarks. Very good. Thank you. I see no more signs up, and so we're going to move on to our executive director's report. You're up.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming in person. It's so good to see so many of you here with us this morning. Two items that I want to cover that are not on my written director's report. First, we received just a brief status update on the lawsuit between the TPA and West Palm Beach regarding the State Road 7 corridor. We had issued a request. We responded to their discovery request several months ago, back in October. We had issued a corresponding request that they would provide information regarding the claims that were made in the lawsuit. We received a partial response to the request for discovery this past week, and the city also filed a motion for summary judgment for the lawsuit this past week. So we're reviewing that content of that motion. It really doesn't vary substantially from the initial claim, but the city felt that it was appropriate to go forward in that manner. So just giving you an update, and we'll continue to keep you apprised of the status of that lawsuit. I also wanted to mention the TPA staff and consulting team has put together a brief one-page handout regarding the role and purpose and kind of impact of the TPA. And we have copies of this on your dais this morning in English. We also have a number of copies available in Spanish if any of you would like to take some of these back with you. I think the one remark I want to share with you is that we had a couple of members of our staff say this is fantastic. Now my spouse, my significant other knows what I do. So I think that's a high praise for a document that can sort of summarize the role and purpose of the TPA. So we have copies of those available to you in case you want to tell members of your community or members of your own family what you do when you show up at a TPA board meeting. We will make it available online. Yes, by the end of today, it will be posted in a digital format as well. So 5 items I want to touch on from the printed report this morning. First is we want to recognize a gentleman by the name of Glenn Harvey. Glenn is a member of our Citizens Advisory Committee who is retiring from his volunteer role in that capacity. He has actually served for 14 years on our Citizens Advisory Committee. We recognized him formally at the Citizens Committee meeting this month, but we wanted to acknowledge his service in front of the TPA Governing Board as well. Fantastic individual who has been a pleasure to work with, and just really appreciate him. And along those lines, I want to remind our TPA Governing Board members, and a number of you have been doing this in the last few months, each one of you individually has the opportunity to nominate an individual to serve on our Citizens Committee. It's supposed to be comprised of 21 members, and if you haven't nominated someone, we're going to be reaching out to you again and encouraging you to consider, and there are some targeted areas that our both state law and our bylaws, our operating procedures suggest that you should focus on with your nominations, but we'll be reaching out to you, asking you to consider that in the future. So some very interesting components on the director's report. First, Vice Mayor Weinroth mentioned earmarks in his remarks. They are actually being called member designated projects. The MDP program. So congressional representatives, House representatives are able to submit to the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee up to $20 million total for all of the submitted projects per member. They're seeking funding to be included in the 2021 Surface Transportation Authorization legislation, big word, and wanted to mention previously, the request was to have those submittals turned into the committee by this Friday. That deadline has now been extended to next Friday, April 23rd. I know some of our members are considering submitting applications. Lots of information available on this. We can talk more offline, but I do want to make sure that the board is aware of this request, this call for submittals. Second item I want to highlight for all of the board to be attentive to is that we are going to be conducting through CEFTEC, through our Southeast Florida Transportation Council, the formal partnership between the Palm Beach TPA, the Broward MPO, and the Miami-Dade TPO. We're going to be conducting a workshop focused on commuter rail on the FEC corridor. So this is not just how do we maximize the impact and benefit of Brightline, which is intercity rail, but how do we introduce more frequent stop commuter rail on the FEC railway. That workshop is going to be on Friday, April 30th from 9:30 to noon. And there's an opportunity to register for the workshop at the link in the director's report. And along those lines, we're trying to make sure that you're aware of what's happening in other parts of the country, not just what's happening in other parts of Southeast Florida. We at the TPA are going to be organizing a virtual workshop or a virtual opportunity to hear from industry leaders on the future of transit and the connection between transit and land use development patterns. That is going to be offered on May 14th, again, from 9 a.m. to noon, and the registration link for that event. That's a virtual event as well. The registration link for that is in the director's report. And then the last item is part of the USDOT Surface Transportation Authorization Bill authorized $1 billion for the Federal Discretionary Grant Program, formerly known as TIGER, more recently known as BUILD, which has now been renamed RAISE. So each time we change an administration, we get a new name, but the opportunity exists to submit applications for a significant amount of federal aid for a surface transportation project. You can ask for up to $25 million per project. Each state cannot get more than $100 million. Last year, actually, Florida received $50 million, well, close to $50 million, two projects on the West Coast in the Tampa Bay area, an interstate interchange project, as well as a complete streets pathway project by the city of Tampa. So opportunities exist. These are first-year dollars. So these are, you know, unlike when you ask for money through the TPA's planning process and we tell you, that's great, we'll put it in year 6. And you look very disgusted with the amount of time that it takes us to get money to the projects. These dollars are available in the first year. And so it's an opportunity to accelerate delivery of projects in our local communities. And I wanted to make the TPA board members aware of that. And Mr. Chair, that's it for my report this morning.
I'm going to open it for questions, but first I'm going to ask Nick, does any of this impact what we have already set up as far as our long range transportation plan?
Well, by any of this, I think you mean if we ask for money from these two programs, are we going to
Well, does any of this harm either siphon of off others? Money
sure.
from what is going to be available through the LRTP, or is this going to be in addition to it? I mean, obviously, there are a lot of moving parts here.
So the RAISE grants are a completely separate and allocated amount in the federal surface transportation appropriation bill, has no negative effect on our long-range plan or our five-year program of projects that have been established by this board. The member-designated projects is a wait and see. I have been told verbally by our congressmen and women in this area that it is their understanding that the allocation of funds to a member-designated project application will not adversely affect the projects in our five-year program. It won't affect our formula funds. It won't reduce the dollars available to the projects that have waited in line, which says to me that either they're going to take the money from another discretionary grant program in order to create the funding needed for the earmarks, or they're going to increase the total authorization amount to allow for funding for the earmarks. But that's not in writing. That's a verbal representation at this time that's been made to me.
Would there be an opportunity to accelerate anything that is already on the LRTP, moving it ahead, like our favorite project, West Atlantic?
And that's certainly been a conversation. We've been having that with the DOT. One of the challenges is that we have to decide how we're going to build the wider roadway in a manner that's compatible with the community's desires and that is supportable by the Lake Worth Drainage District, which is adjacent to the Atlantic Avenue corridor on the south side. To the extent that we can resolve all community and drainage district issues, additional funding would allow for acceleration of the construction of that project. But that's a big question that we're working aggressively to answer so that we can have that, as you mentioned, a shovel-ready project that could consume a lot of resources in right-of-way acquisition and construction dollars that we would be ready to pull the trigger on.
All right. We won't put State Road 7 up there. Okay. Yes, Commissioner Sachs, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. The federal grant that was originally known as Tiger and now known as RAISE, is that something that we can apply for as a governing board of this agency?
The short answer is yes. MPOs federally are permitted to be applicants. We've actually had two projects in Florida applied for by an MPO. The Lee County MPO 5 or 6 years ago applied for a program of projects for complete streets, and they were actually willing to become a construction management entity, which is an unusual role for a planning agency to take. We don't typically build the projects. We identify what we would like to have built, and then we hand off to one of our partner agencies for design and construction administration. The Lee County MPO actually did the construction. Broward MPO won a Tiger grant 3 years ago now, 2018, I believe it was, and asked the Florida Department of Transportation to be the constructing entity for their Tiger grant. And that's another option available to us. But also counties are able to apply as a county, cities are able to apply, and transit agencies as well.
I would suggest that, and I don't know exactly the procedures, I'm sure that you or Mr. Weinroth would be able to figure it out, but how can we as an agency, as a governing board of this agency, request funds for federal funds to help in delineating those areas on A1A that should be only for bicycles or pedestrians or, you know, skateboarders, anybody that is not a motor vehicle? Because I know that in terms of using the entire county and not just taking a specific area such as State Road 7 or West Atlantic, but everyone in this county enjoys that beach and that beach area, and A1A is so dangerous. And it would take an enormous amount of state funds or county funds to be able to construct a viable bicycle path roadway there for folks who want to be able to enjoy that area without having to be in jeopardy of their life. So if we could either take a vote or do something so that we would, as an agency, be able to apply for some of this federal money coming down for our county. And then later, I guess we could vote on what particular part of our transportation system in the county that would be best served by the infusion of these federal funds. So I guess I'm asking you, how do we proceed if we wanted to do that? Because I can see that the date is coming up pretty quickly for the application.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond,
please,
somewhat candidly on this question. As a bicyclist, I would love the introduction of designated bicycle facilities on the entirety of the A1A within Palm Beach County. Data certainly suggests that it is our most heavily bicycled route in the entire county. The challenge hasn't really been resources. It has been local community opposition to the introduction of designated bicycle lanes. So if we have elected official resolve to push through the concerns of the local communities, I think we could pursue resources to implement that as an outcome. But I would look back to you as elected officials and say, make sure you know what you're committing yourselves to, because there will be questions that arise.
There is, and if I may respond, Mr. Chairman, a couple of years ago, there was a proposal in the state legislature for small rods that are flexible, not like steel rods, but flexible rods, also with small reflecting tabs all along a bicycle path that are actually manufactured here in the city of West Palm Beach. They're solar powered, so they wouldn't take any energy. And, there's a cost, but I think that if we would at least resolve to request funding. Otherwise, this is federal funding that is available to this county. This is an agency that would be the appropriate agency to ask for it, since it concerns transportation. So maybe it's a twofold, request. One, should we as an agency apply for this grant? And two, maybe we could take a vote later as to where we would want this money to go. But I would certainly request that we as an agency, as a governing board of this agency, request this federal funding come to Palm Beach County.
Commissioner, I think that we certainly as a board probably should investigate this. We have a little bit of time between now and July, and perhaps, Nick, you could put this on the agenda for our next meeting so we could have notice that this is going to be discussed, and the representatives here have an opportunity to speak to their own constituencies and their board members so that they have a better idea of their own tolerance for this kind of a suggestion for funding.
Okay. Again, Vice Chair Weinroth, I would request that this be put on the agenda, not for a specific function, but at least to request the funds. Then later we can discuss where we want the money to go. I'm sure that'll be quite an interesting discussion. But at least first, let's put it on the agenda so that we can have a vote on whether we should go ahead and apply for these federal funds to come to the county. If I could, thank you.
All right, Nick, perhaps you can work with the commissioner on finding out exactly what kind of a proposal she'd like to put in front of us for the next meeting. And at that point, we could have a robust conversation about this.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. All right, Council Member Hamara, your turn.
Oh, good morning, thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. First of all, as one of the longest standing alternates, with the opportunity to occasionally sit up here instead of in the audience, I want to tell you that it really is important to take advantage of the opportunity to make an appointment to the Citizens Advisory Committee. And as we're talking about these kinds of issues, the more educated, more members of our community become at a greater level of detail, the better our chances of getting public support for these things that have been contentious and not so readily supported in the past. And And so I will tell you, this is the first time also that I know of that the Village of Royal Palm Beach will have a member of the Citizens Advisory Council, assuming everybody votes in favor of the consent agenda item. So I'm pleased that to be here, and I'm pleased that we're going to have a representative on the CAC.
Thank you, Jeff. And that sort of begs the question, is the CAC going to be meeting before our next meeting? And is it possible to give them an opportunity to opine on this?
Yes, and maybe. You asked me to work with Commissioner Sachs to refine the proposal, and we would need to do that in time to include that refined proposal on the CAC agenda, which goes out next week. So we have our work cut out for us, but we can certainly make a yeoman's effort on it.
I think Commissioner Sachs will make herself available as early as right after this meeting.
Thank you, Vice Chairman.
Okay. Commissioner McAvoy.
Yes, two things. One, although Lake Worth Beach does not have a portion of A1A as part of us, I fully support and hear the concerns raised by Nick on biking and the local support. So I would add to Maria's request, maybe in timing with that, some sort of reach out to the individual municipalities to make sure that they're aware of it and that we'd like their support to get that going. Because it would certainly be nice to look like the whole county is in agreement that we want to do this over the whole length. The other comment is unrelated to that. I forgot a couple of things in my earlier comments, but now that I hear that there's all sorts of funding opportunities, let it be known that Lake Worth has its hand out, and two areas that we're very interested in and have been for a while, and I think I can speak for all of our commission at this point, is the commuter rail, or we'd take either a Brightline or a commuter rail station on the FEC line, and our other interest, longstanding interest.
I think that train has already left the station.
I think it probably has. We tried to compete with West Palm, didn't work, but the commuter rail, we might have some eligibility. And the other one is there's a lot of interest in our community in complete streets. So we will be speaking with Nick about, you know, whatever the procedure is to look into both of those funding opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I know all of this is very, very compatible with Vision Zero. And obviously everything we're trying to do to eliminate the hazards to pedestrians and bicycle users of our roads. I mean, this all is part of that package. So I certainly embrace the idea of trying to look at what we can do to protect the lives of our pedestrian and non-motor vehicle drivers. Councilmember Thompson, you're up.
I just wanted to follow up on what Councilman Hamora just mentioned, which was the importance of serving and appointing people to the CAC. I myself was once a member of the CAC, courtesy of our distinguished chair. And I served there for a couple of years, and it was actually very, very helpful and educational, and set me up, I think, in a good way to be able to serve on this board. So, and I should say that I, despite having served on the CAC for several years, I myself neglected to nominate somebody for a period of time until recently. And that new appointee who we appointed, I think maybe a month or two ago, was recently installed as the chair of the CAC. So all of us have the chance to do it. All of us have the chance to have members of our own communities partake and understand what the TPA does, and can help create a more safe transportation network for us all. So I think we all should take advantage of that opportunity.
Watch out.
Unlike me, who didn't for, you know, however long it took me to appoint somebody.
Watch out. He may be on an identical career path. Mayor Grant.
Thank you. I'm glad we're having all this discussion on bike paths and making sure that our bicyclists are safe. One of the other conversations is bike sharing. I know that West Palm Beach has one. My city has opened it up to first come, first serve to use city property for free to start the program. However, no one has taken us up on that offer. And so it's kind of reaching out to my neighbors to the north, Lake Worth Beach, to the south, Delray Beach, to see if anyone's talked to them about bike sharing, and hopefully maybe have a conversation so that if we can't find a private bike sharing company, possibly a public bike sharing with through the parks and recs of each of our municipalities. So that's what I just reach out to each of you to see if we can't have a conversation in the future.
Mayor Petroli, have you had any conversations in that regard?
We have, and it's been back and forth. We've actually had some opportunities, but it hasn't been received entirely well because of the fact of having the infrastructure in order to be able to support it. That was our biggest concern, that we would put bikes on the roads that are not really made for both travel of cars and bikes. But we're not, it hasn't died. It just was put on hold until we could figure it out. And we've actually added, thanks to the TPA, a great bike route that hopefully Boynton will be connected to down Second Seacrest. And that should be moving through. And we've got another that's going to be coming in to go an east-west route. So I think that that'll be an appropriate time to bring this up again.
Thank you for your input. Okay. Andy, you still want to speak, or are you? Okay, very good. Any other comments? Okay, Nick, thank you very much for your report. I appreciate that. It takes us now to the consent agenda. I'm going to ask if any board members would like to remove any item that's on the consent agenda. Anybody on the virtual part of the meeting putting their hand up? No?
No, Mr. Chair.
Second.
Okay. I have a motion for Commissioner Marino, a second. Mayor Flores, okay. All in favor of the approval of the consent agenda, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Against or opposed? Okay, it passes unanimously. Thank you. All right. Now it's time for action items. I'm going to invite Jason Price to make a presentation. And there he is, front and center.
Morning, everyone. My name is Jason Price. I'm the TPA TIP coordinator for the Palm Beach County, for Palm Beach TPA. I'm also the CAC liaison, and I have been regularly inviting your citizens to that CAC.
I'm going to ask you to talk up a little bit.
Sorry. So I'm the TIP coordinator as well as the CAC liaison, and I've been regularly inviting and welcoming all of the citizens that have been appointed. And it's been great to see a wide diverse group of citizens come to the CAC. So today I'm going to present to you amendment number 4 for the Transportation Improvement Program. And that'll consist of 3 projects, 2 FDOT projects and 1 transit project. And the TIP is the 5-year funding program for transportation projects in Palm Beach County. Just as a reminder, this is an action item that will require a vote at the end of the presentation and discussion. Before I go into the 3 projects, I'm going to just go over why a TIP amendment is required and what triggers a TIP amendment. The first one is a TIP amendment is required when a project is added or deleted from the Transportation Improvement Program. The second reason is when a project increases beyond 20% of the total cost and more than $2 million. The third reason is when a project scope changes with a length change of a half a mile and 20% of the project, or the number of through lanes changes. And as also, a TIP amendment only impacts the projects that are listed in the amendment itself. It does not impact any other project within the TIP document. Now I'll start with the FDOT projects, the first being I-95 at Lantana Road Interchange. This particular project was brought before you exactly a year ago in April in 2020, when they presented the PD&E study for the alternatives. At a conclusion of that, the preferred alternative that was selected was a divergent diamond interchange, or DDI. So this particular amendment adds design funds to begin the design of the preferred alternative, which is the DDI. And that's what you see on the screen here today, is the addition of design funds. just to give an illustration of what a divergent diamond interchange is, the top of the screen, you see the existing condition of what's out there today. And below there, you see the conceptual design of what it would look like. And you'll also note that on the bottom, there is also the new underpass service road that is in addition to the DDI construction. Now, when this project went through the committees, the BTPAC had requested that instead of a bike lane, to consider a shared use pathway or a wider sidewalk through the project limits to accommodate all users and of all users' ages and abilities. And this request is also included in the draft resolution as part of this TIP amendment. The next FDOT project is US 27 at Ocalante Road. This particular project is to increase the construction funds to accommodate longer acceleration lanes and embankment work. So what you see on the screen here is the addition of the construction funds at about $3.5 million to accommodate that additional construction for the acceleration lanes as part of this project. And there's one more project, and that's the transit project that was referenced earlier. And this is the request by Delray, the city of, it's a request by Delray Beach to cancel the trolley project and then to take those funds and repurpose those funds to the Tri-Rail layover station. And that is the next TPA transit project in line to receive those funds. And what you see on the screen here is the deletion of that project and then the repurposing of those funds to the Tri-Rail Northern layover station. And the total amount is $860,000 that would be repurposed and transferred to the Tri-Rail for that project. And with that, that's the summary of those three projects as part of this amendment, and we'll take questions at this time.
Mr. Price, as I understand it, the funding for the Delray project was actually going to go to the Tri-Rail and they were going to disperse to Delray. Is that how that was going to work?
Yes, they were working in coordination. So Tri-Rail, the city of Delray Beach is kind of a sponsor, you know, works with Tri-Rail to receive those funds. So they coordinate amongst the two of them.
Okay, and Council Member Thompson is gone, so he's not going to hear my comments, but I was a little disappointed in Boca Raton when they decided to do the same thing and turn aside the funding for their trolley. I understand that there are certainly financial considerations, ongoing maintenance of the service, but you know, we're talking a lot about mobility, and I know we're going to have that conversation, and it's certainly very topical with the gardens right now. I think we all have to at some point figure out what we're going to do to move our residents around the urban corridors or urban cores. And I know former Mayor Haney and I had been strong advocates for, you know, a trolley in Boca Raton. I was sorry to see that the council had decided to defer on that. But again, I understand there are other considerations. That being said, does anybody have any other comments with respect to the report that's been made? Mayor Petrolia.
Yes, I wanted to speak to that, and I think that you hit the nail on the head. There are some different circumstances. It's a very expensive route that we were handling, but more so than that, there were a lot of restrictions as to what type of trolley you could get. We were not able to get anything that was advanced, electric, anything that made sense for our city other than just these old-fashioned noxious spewing type of vehicles, and that just was not palatable by the commission as well. So that was added to the story. I think that if we were allowed to go and get an electric vehicle and do something more modern, we would have probably went with it. So I think that that's something that needs to be taken into consideration as well. We were told that there were restrictions as to what we could actually employ. And so that kind of put the the final nail in the coffin, so to speak.
Mayor, are they still running the trolley back and forth on Atlantic, or is
they're
that?
Not.
They're not.
We are only employing the little golf carts, the freebies that we was once called the Downtowner.
Right, right. Okay.
Thank you,
Mayor. Commissioner Lambert.
Thank you. Mayor Petrolia addressed some of the question that I had, which was I wanted a little bit more understanding of why we were declining the trolley funds. And given the information that she's just shared, I know that in West Palm Beach, we've had discussion and are purchasing more environmentally safe vehicles. That's just not an option with these funds? Is that?
Nick, you want to respond to that?
I don't have a good answer off the top of my head. I know the funds have to comply with federal regulations, which includes Buy America, which does have some constraints over the type of vehicles that can be purchased with the dollars. That being said, one of the things that we offered to Delray Beach, and we're certainly willing to do with the city of West Palm, because you're a recipient of funding from the TPA to purchase additional local transit vehicles similar to Boca and Delray were, is to work with you to maximize the flexibility available with the funding, because we understand that our communities want future-facing investments. We want vehicles that are electric, that are environmentally friendly, that are resilient, that and we will work with you to make sure that those are also federal aid eligible to the maximum extent that we can.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Commissioner Marino?
Thank you. As the county's representative on SFRTA, which is the Tri-Rail board, anything we can do to help Tri-Rail bring bring more service to the north end of the county, I would encourage. And just being able to take this money and put it in the maintenance facility means that Tri-Rail may be able to have other dollars freed up. So thank you for this. If we do approve it, I am in favor. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Weiss.
Thank you. Just going back to the trolleys, recently we had a meeting with Treasure Coast Regional Planning, and there was a presentation done of these self-driving vehicles. They're small, they're electric, and maybe that's something to follow up with and see about maybe using those for these opportunities. Although they are self-driving, there is a driver that's there in the vehicle for safety reasons, but the vehicles themselves are able to navigate the streets. And these routes would probably be excellent routes for them to traverse. You know, Nick, they're small.
It's interesting, Nick, because I know we've been to several presentations where they've had the autonomous vehicles that are being used for, again, downtown connectivity. And I'm wondering when we might have the opportunity to bid on some or have a grant for something like that. Obviously, Mayor Petrolia's comments are well taken. We don't want to be taking old technology when the autonomous vehicles are out there. And certainly, again, when I was a city, we had talked about that as well. I think that there are streets here in West Palm Beach, in Delray Beach, in Boca Raton, and other urban areas where those autonomous vehicles could have application.
Sure.
So maybe we can do something to try and investigate the opportunities to get those and a grant for those as well.
I hear you.
Okay.
We will definitely investigate the ability to use federal funds for those outcomes.
Very good. Thank you. Commissioner McVoy.
Just to add our city to the list of interested electric trolleys. Thanks.
Okay. Do any comments? Oh, we do have a...
Just one more. I just wanted to mention one other thing. There was also restrictions on the size or the capacity of the vehicles. And that was another issue. So the smaller autonomous, those self-driving vehicles, we'd have to also make sure that that wouldn't eliminate what we would be looking for in the future. Because again, there are a lot of streets in our cities, respective cities, that can't handle a large trolley, like an open air trolley, that are the real large ones where we had restrictions with respect to that as well. And I know that the TPA was looking to work with us, but unfortunately, I don't think that there was, like I said, an appetite for it after we had learned as a group what our restrictions were. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah. All right. I just want to stress what was in the presentation for some of our members here, and that is that the TIP amendments will only impact the items that we're amending today. So that should help you in your decision whether to vote for this amendment. With that being said, it was part of the presentation and it's now part of the record that, and I will ask David to give us his legal opinion with respect to this amendment. And the reason why we're bringing this up is it keeps coming up. We have some projects on the TIP that there are people within this body feel uncomfortable approving, and they don't want it to be viewed as ratifying the other items on the TIP if they approve this particular amendment of these three items.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. David Tolsis. Here for Mr. Googleman this morning. As you looked at your resolution regarding the TIP amendment, it specifically states at the top of page 2 that this amendment does not affect or readopt any other provision of the TIP. So we're only dealing with the amendments that are presented to you this morning. But certainly those members who don't feel comfortable voting in favor of it for one reason or another, that is within their discretion. Thank
very,
you.
Very good. Thank you for that legal input. Commissioner, you're recognized.
Thank you. Just to clarify, I remember a few months ago we had a similar situation amendment. I don't know if it was to the TIP or to the long range transportation plan.
Yeah.
And we had some debate on this, and I hate to belabor this issue, but I just want to be careful. Can you tell me, is this similar to that vote that or that amendment?
Mr. Chair, if I could. Mm-hmm. It's identical. It was a TIP amendment 2 months ago, and the resolution of the concern was the introduction of a sentence in the resolution saying we're only approving the content of this amendment. We're not ratifying the remaining content of the entire document by the motion being considered by the TPA board. That same language that was included in that resolution is included in this resolution.
And again, I will leave it to our representatives who have a conflict, whether they feel comfortable with this amendment. Mr. Peduzzi.
Thank you. Just for clarification, was that same sentence included the last time that it's not a ratification of the whole thing, just the items in the amendment? Or is that something new for this time?
Council.
I wasn't here personally for that meeting, so I can't speak to, and I haven't seen that resolution. Maybe Margie can answer that question.
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair and Commissioners. That was included, like Nick said, 2 meetings ago. Our legal counsel, Paul Googleman, asked us to add the language that the amendment does not affect or readopt any other provision to the TIP. And if you would like, I can pull the resolution up so that everyone can see it. And then we included the exact same language this time around in our resolution. So it'll include this last sentence, which is under section 2, that this amendment does not affect or readopt any other provision of the TIP.
All right, with that legal clarification and seeing no further conversation and
can
debate,
we call the question?
I'm going to ask for a motion to adopt the
resolution. I will make a motion.
All right, who made the motion?
I have it.
Commissioner Marino has made the motion. Commissioner Napoleon is the seconder. And we have to have a roll call for this vote. So Margie, would you please call the roll?
Yes, sir. So just to reiterate for everybody, the motion on the floor is to adopt a resolution approving amendment number 4 to the fiscal year 21-25 TIP as presented, but the resolution does include that sentence that the amendment does not affect or readopt any other provision of the TIP. And I had a motion by Commissioner Marino and a second by Councilmember Napoleon. When I call your name, if you can please state yes or no, and then make sure to turn your mic on using the button on the base, and then those participants remotely, if you can please unmute. Steve Wilson is absent. Yvette Drucker?
Yes.
Andy Thompson?
Yes.
Stephen Grant?
Yes.
Shelley Petrolia?
Yes.
Joelle Flores?
Yes.
Jim Koretsky?
Yes.
Christopher McAvoy? Yes. I'm sorry, McVoy. My apologies. Joni Brinkman.
Yes.
Catherine Waldron left the meeting, so she will be marked as absent. Chelsea Reed.
Yes.
Mac Bernard.
Yes.
Maria Marino.
Yes.
Maria Sachs.
Yes.
Greg Weiss.
Yes.
Douglas Lawson is not here, so he will be marked as absent. Michael Napoleone.
Yes.
Christina Lambert.
Yes.
Joseph Peduzzi.
Yes.
Jeff Hamara.
Yes.
Robert Weinroth.
Yes.
It passes unanimously, Mr. Chair.
Unanimously. How do you like that? All right. We did one.
Can do it.
I'm with it. That's because I'm chair.
Excuse my French, but oh, God.
With that, we'll move on to informational items. And I'd like to recognize our good friend, Dr. Kim Delaney.
Go play that for Fred.
Council. Whoops, sorry about that. I'll try it again. Kim Delaney from Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council, and thanks for the opportunity to present an update to the board. This morning's item is an update on quiet zone establishment for Brightline Phase 2, which is that portion of Brightline running from West Palm up to Tequesta. The Regional Planning Council, as I think the members are aware, is a kind of an extension of the planning arm of the TPA. So we're available to assist on any projects related to the TPA's mission. So quiet zones is one of those. It's a very popular topic now that trains are starting to operate again with more frequency on the corridor. For those of you who aren't familiar with a quiet zone, quiet zones are actually an option for local governments or entities that control roadways available under federal code. The quiet zone refers to a section of rail where a local government or another entity has determined there's enough safety infrastructure in place such that blowing a horn wouldn't make it any safer to further inform folks that grade crossing is not the place to be. So quiet zones presume that if you have gates coming down, medians to separate traffic so you can't kind of swerve around and get into the grade crossing, lights and bells that are dinging, drivers and pedestrians and cyclists are aware enough that a train's coming so that if you take away the horn, there's no real added measure for safety at that point. There is a bit of a math process required to establish a quiet zone, and that relates to an analysis that allows you to calculate the risk with horns versus the risk without horns. I think we want to go back one. Thanks for that. We went forward. So if we can go back, I think two. There you go. Thanks so much. So with respect to that math analysis, there's actually an online calculator called the Quiet Zone Calculator. It's on the FRA's website. And that what that allows you to do is analyze the risk with horns versus analyzing the risk without horns. And the risk is mitigated by adding additional safety measures, right? So if you have a set of two gates and you add two additional gates, you actually make the grade crossing safer. The calculator lets you run an analysis to determine whether or not ultimately the risk index without horns is equal to or less than the risk index with horns. Okay, so that analysis is one that will be undertaken likely by your public works departments or your planning departments in the local governments where quiet zones are to be established. The TPA and the council are assisting the local governments in that exercise. And that work is being coordinated with both Brightline and FDOT to make sure that all the numbers are accurate and all the data is accurate and up to date. What are the types of risks that mitigate safety in the grade crossings? The default condition is adding a second set of gates. All of the grade crossings have already two quadrant gates. So those are gates that prevent entry lanes from getting into the grade crossing. As the diagram illustrates, a second set of gates called exit gates take you from a two quadrant to a four quadrant gate condition. That's considered to be the safest condition with respect to infrastructure. And that's appropriate in many locations, but we don't have locations where every grade crossing is required to have those four quadrant gates because we don't have the same speed conditions along the corridor. But this is the default condition. It's the most expensive, by the way, because there's not only a cost to install those gates, but there's also a cost to operate and maintain those. And so the TPA has been very focused on that to not put additional financial obligations on the local governments if they aren't necessary, because the local governments have to pay for those gates in perpetuity for O&M. So with respect to the establishment of quiet zones, We are moving through the process. The TPA has already initiated the analysis of kind of the baseline conditions, if you will, to determine what will likely be necessary when Brightline is operational. That work actually took place a few years ago, and the TPA has already allocated the funding necessary to pay for the additional infrastructure that's been anticipated. In addition to that, the work that lies ahead is to complete updating the inventory for all of the existing conditions. And then Brightline has to finish doing its work in improving the corridor, adding the second set of tracks, doing all the bridge improvements, and then all the grade crossing safety improvements. While that's underway, the cities will be providing ultimately notices of intent to let the railroad operators and DOT know that there is a quiet zone that is anticipated to be established at a point in the future. The TPA is going to conduct a workshop and present to cities. We'll be providing assistance to the TPA as that workshop takes place in the summer of this year. The TPA, if needed, will be obtaining FRA or Federal Railroad Administration approval for any quiet zone infrastructure that's different than that four quadrant gate or traditional safety infrastructure situation. Upon the completion of getting that FRA approval, Brightline will finish installing all the safety measures. The cities have a responsibility to go out and verify that everything in the federal database with respect to safety infrastructure is actually in place. So they just field verify it and document that for the city. FRA will accompany the city staff when that takes place. Regional Planning Council will as well. And so field verification and following that, the cities will be filing notices of establishment. Time frame wise, those safety inspections are going to be taking place when Brightline finishes its construction activity. Right now, that's expected to be towards the end of next year, the end of 2022. And then notices of establishment able to be filed when the corridor is finished and inspected. That's probably going to be early 2023. Okay, so that's the time frame. You'll see actions on your council agendas as that activity is taking place with updates to you. The council will assist in providing those updates with, again, a workshop this summer, and then formal activities taking place likely towards the end, the middle to end of next year. Okay. So with questions, forgot to mention, there are always questions about pedestrian safety. So one of the things that we're very focused on, especially in this part of the region, is the active pedestrian crossings that are taking place along the corridor. Brightline was a new introduction of service, and we had some tragic history associated with Brightline's first time frame of operations. We know as a region that a lot of people have forgotten there's trains that are going to keep running on that corridor, right? So we've only had freight trains, and we haven't had as many of them during COVID-19. And so all the rail activity is now going to start picking up as the economy continues to recover. So we'll see additional freight traffic running on the corridor. But those are trains that people are more used to than Brightline trains that are going to start running again the end of this year. That's Brightline's expectation to resume service. And so the Regional Planning Council is also coordinating with DOT for some extra safety workshops that we're going to start this summer to do our best job of understanding what are the safety practices that have worked the best in our communities and in others with respect to reaching out to the community, speaking through the school network, neighborhood organization network, additional signage, pavement markings. There's a series of additional safety measures that have been identified and are continuing to advance. And so we'll be conducting that workshop this summer to try to raise the level of awareness at the local government level and then assist as needed to raise the level of awareness in the community. A lot of new people that have moved to Florida in the time frame while Brightline's not been operating. So there's a need for that additional engagement, and we're already anticipating that again to begin this summer and continue through the fall. Just with respect to those types of infrastructure improvements, as the slide indicates, formal sidewalks across the corridor, tactile plates to let folks know from a tactile sensation if they're in a wheelchair using a stroller or biking that, hey, pay attention, there's a grade crossing, pedestrian crossing gates, flashing lights, and also signage on sidewalks or pavement markings like the one that's illustrated in this the image on the slide. So just a point of awareness for local governments. We're all aware there's a history with the corridor that's one that we don't want to repeat. So we're trying to do our best to learn from that experience and get ahead of those problems so that we can be more informed and safer as a region. Okay. And so with that, I think the next slide is where you get more information. Of course, general rail information is always available on the TPA's website. Brightline has a regular construction activity update posted on its website. Those two links are on this slide. And then I'm the point of contact for the region if there are any questions about anything related to trains, including pedestrian safety and quiet zones, along with everything else. So I'm kind of a utility infielder for many of the agencies. So if there are questions, please send them my way. I've been getting lots of calls from residents who are just moving to Florida. They bought their house and they're like, wait a second, there's a train that runs and it blows a horn. What the heck is that all about? So you can send those calls my way. I'm perfectly comfortable having those conversations. Yeah, it's only running since 1898. So at any rate, please feel free to send those questions my way and I'm happy to field them and get information back to residents as quickly as possible or staff. So, and with that, that's the conclusion for my presentation. Happy to answer questions if there are any.
Thank you, Dr. Delaney. And certainly, we don't want to repeat the tragic history that we all watched as Brightline was initially started. Delray Beach had an unfortunate set of circumstances there. And, you know, we have situations all along the corridor. We've had suicide by train. And we've also had people, like you said, who are used to slow moving freights. And all of a sudden, these come whizzing by. And unfortunately, train versus person, it's not a good combination. So I think it's going to behoove us to have a very, very vibrant public service campaign when these trains get back on the corridor again. I'm sure Mr. Koretsky is going to have something to say about the northern parts of this county as far as goat paths and other areas where people just meander back and forth across tracks. But, you know, this is something that we're all excited about, getting transportation from Miami up to Orlando. I'm looking forward to be able to take the train to the MPOAC meetings up in Orlando and ultimately get to Tampa. But it's not without a price, and we certainly need to continue to educate our stakeholders. And with that, I will let Council Member Koretsky have the floor.
Question, but actually, you know, you somewhat discussed it, but it's an ask. I think, you know, there's so much interest in this. You know, you look at the slide 5 you had where, you know, you show a number of steps and you see a check on the first one. And then I had asked ahead of time, I would have liked to have seen a slide with the schedule because I think that's most important. People are seeing, you know, construction in their mind is about done. And, you know, I think I just heard you say this is not going to be the end of next year. Well, I think somehow we want to be out front doing more than just turning calls over to you, because this is the one item I get more calls about or asks about than anything. And I think what's missing in the presentation is just the expectation on when is the quiet zone going to happen. I myself don't know, and I will go and look myself to the information, but it'd be great because I would love to post this presentation, but lacking a schedule, it's just going to really beg more calls about it. Well, gee, we're done. I mean, I see Brightline's about finished up and they're not done. And I understand that, but I'd appreciate if you could get us a slide on that. That's, you know, that's explanatory because it'll really help. And I appreciate what I'm hearing about the meetings about safety, and because that's, you know, I'm separating now the quiet zone from safety, which is more the pure. But not to go over what I've said before about safety concerns. You know, there's even a signage. Nick was educating me about, and I've asked our staff to look into it, because signage that has been posted by Brightline says trains can exceed 80 mile an hour. And I had asked about that and I was told, well, that is what the sign has to say. Well, it's going to go up to 109 mile an hour when it enters into Jupiter. I want our public to know how fast it's going to go. So I think it's wrong to be saying it's going to go above 80. I mean, I want people to be scared to get on the track. 109, you can't judge it. So I'm pursuing that with our staff, but there seems to be something wrong with the signage. The signage ought to represent the hazard that's going to happen. And understating the speed is in itself is going to cause some unsafe situation. So I'd appreciate any help you could give on that. But I've got our staff following up on that because I've come to believe it. Maybe I'm misunderstanding that it may require some legislative change or whatever. Fine, we're going to pursue it.
Okay. And we'll explore to find out if there's additional signage that you can put in that's informational.
So but they just did.
That above 80 mile an hour sign, I think, is the federal code sign. But I'll find out if there's additional informational signage a local government can install.
But
so I haven't asked that question.
But now that we have high-speed rail, I mean, the federal should change. It should say change to what it is. It shouldn't be a standard of 80. 80 used to be the standard. It's a lot faster now, and it ought to say that.
Right.
But thank you.
Absolutely. And no problem. There's actually a schedule slide that, in the interest of brevity, was taken out. But we'll be happy to add that slide back in. So you have that.
Margie, I was remiss in not requesting if we had any public comments before we started our conversation.
It's okay. I was going to state it at the end, but no public comments were received on this.
Very good. Okay. Commissioner Marino.
Just to reiterate, the TPA has set aside dollars for the quiet zones, correct? Okay. And then once those dollars are paid and the quiet zones are done, FEC goes back to doing the maintenance on the crossings and then sending the municipalities or the county the bill.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Nick, in that funding, is there any money set aside for PSAs?
There's not, but we could supplement with some outreach and educational work that through the TPA's planning funds. The money we're giving to Brightline was just for construction of infrastructure, either medians or exit gates, and then the pedestrian pathways across the rail corridor and the additional pedestrian gates to support them. But yeah, we could certainly.
I think past history has demonstrated that we need to get in front of this and hopefully save a few people from a fate worse than, or a fate that equals death. Commissioner Lambert.
Thank you so much for the presentation. In West Palm Beach, I hear from our residents downtown in our condos, as well as in our historic neighborhoods where the railway goes through, that they completely love and appreciate the quiet zone. So thank you for that. And thank you for the funding and support that West Palm Beach got for that. One thing that I've heard, and I'm just curious if you can confirm or deny this, is that if that foolish behavior that you noted on that one slide where people are crossing the tracks and let's say accidents or crashes happen, are we at risk of losing those quiet zones? Because in West Palm, we only do have the two gates. And, you know, we would like to either install the other two gates or the medians. And I don't know if there's funding for that. So I guess it's two questions. Is are we at risk? And is there additional funding if we wanted to increase the safety there?
Okay, so let me answer it in two pieces. So one piece is there funding available for additional safety infrastructure? There's no funding in the TPA budget now, but it's an eligible expenditure through the TPA budget appropriation process. So there's nothing that says a local government can't install additional safety infrastructure if it wants to, right? It's not always necessary, but it's available to you. So that additional safety infrastructure can be funded by the city, could be funded by the TPA. It's possible there. I'm not aware of DOT funding, but maybe there's DOT funding. We haven't looked into that yet, but an easier question to answer. So you can always put in more safety infrastructure. The other part of the question is with respect to maintaining a quiet zone. And so as we understand it, once a quiet zone is established and a corridor begins operation, there's of course annual monitoring, right? Actually regular monitoring of activity. So every time, unfortunately, when a crash happens, of course, that data is being plugged into the quiet zone calculator, and a new calculation of risk becomes the new standard. And so there is a risk that a quiet zone could no longer be permitted if the crash history is documenting or illustrating that there's not enough safety infrastructure there. Hmm. So we haven't run the calculator to look at existing quiet zones because we're not aware there's any problem in place. But that's one of the things I should probably add to our task list, is to do an update to find out where we are. So we know we had a lot of crashes, a very tragic opening of the corridor back in 2017, right? Is that when we started service, I think? And so you would hope as a policymaker or as a staff member, there's a much higher level of awareness now that, gosh, there are trains and they move quickly and don't go tart in front of it because that's not the place to be. So you hope that we're more knowledgeable as a region now. But again, thinking about how things have changed from when trains stopped operating to when they become reintroduced, we actually reached out to FDOT, and we're going to be working with DOT for that best practices discussion this summer, because DOT, while they don't have the responsibility for quiet zones, it's in everyone's interest to have as safe a corridor as we can. So we'll learn more this summer and try to get out ahead of the reintroduction of service so that we can have awareness high and expectations high. The other measure just to mention, Commissioner Weinroth, is with respect to suicide prevention. And so it is, unfortunately, railroads are the number one place where suicide, the number one reason for crashes on a rail corridor is due to suicide, right? Secondary reason is due to drug and alcohol abuse. And so Brightline is an active partner in funding suicide prevention, as do all the railroads in the country. And so that's another measure that we want to be mindful of, I think, as we get into the fall, which is raising the awareness that there's suicide assistance and having that hotline information available to folks that need it. Because that's the other factor that's just out there. We can't control for that. So there's people making unfortunate decisions intentionally and people making unfortunate decisions unintentionally. So we want to, at a minimum, try to give as much assistance as we can to reduce the likelihood of that happening.
Thank you. Sure. Nick, we alluded to the fact that the quiet zones are being funded by the TPA. Would this be an appropriate area for MDPs to be looking maybe to substitute for funding that the TPA was going to earmark for those projects?
To the extent that a city wants to install additional gates at some of the crossings within your jurisdiction, that could be an eligible request for member designated project funding. But understand that you need to coordinate with the railroad to ensure that they will construct those, because you're building gates within their right of way. Their right of way continues across your road, and your road exists by easement. It's not the other way around. So a city street that wants to install additional gates would need the railroad to consent to the installation. And you also need to budget for the additional operation and maintenance of those gates at the city streets. And so you can certainly investigate it, and we would facilitate the discussion if you're interested.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. And, you know, I really do appreciate the PSAs and the community outreach, but I think that if there's one thing I've learned from studying transportation and being on the board of the TPA is if we engineer it correctly, that will help prevent people from making some of those poor decisions. One of the other safety measures that we have installed are those flexible delineators, those stanchions. Do we give more preference to maybe the concrete islands in the middle that are a little bit harder to run over? I mean, you know, if anybody is looking to get these quiet zones in your area, I will tell you, on a constant basis, we're having to replace those rubber delineators because people just drive right over them.
Right. So the way the calculator works, right, is it assigns the level of risk reduction to each type of improvement. So the highest level of risk reduction is assigned to four quadrant gates, right? Because now you have gates that physically prevent people from getting in the grade crossing, even if they cut around a median. So that's the highest level of risk reduction. It's the most expensive to install, and it's the most expensive to maintain, but it is what it is. So the next level of risk reduction is assigned to those medians, right? And the longer a median, the more risk reduction you have, because you have to make a decision 8 cars back if you're going to try to cut through and get through the grade crossing. So concrete medians are the next level of risk reduction. And that varies based on how long they are and how high they are. It's always good to have those flexible delimiters, I think they're called. Even though people drive over them, it's frustrating, but they do add additional awareness. I don't think you get points for them. I think that's a local decision. So those are the primary pieces. You can always one-way streets. One-waying streets instead of two-way streets are safer. So that's an option. That's not a transportation planning practice we recommend, because there's some downsides to doing that as well. But those are other pieces. So, and then there are infrastructure pieces that aren't consistent with quiet zones, like putting train horns, permanent horns that blow down the street. So the train doesn't blow its horn down the corridor, but when the grade crossing is approached by the train, there's a horn that sounds in the area. Residents don't like that. Not consistent with quiet zones the way we think about them, but there are other measures that are available to you. So, but that's kind of how they break out. So, and we're certainly happy to assist the TPA as needed in looking at, additional infrastructure if that's something the city wants to pursue. Sure.
Councilmember Koretsky.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, since the reference was made about something being engineered correctly, as a professional engineer, I just want to emphasize for the record that the only thing being engineered is the crossings themselves. And I feel pretty comfortable, although I don't practice in that area, I feel pretty comfortable that crossings are being done properly. What's not being done is between crossings. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands there is no engineering being done on public safety between crossings.
Thank you.
And if I can just add to that point, and thank you for raising it, so I forgot to mention, the other measure that you can install is fencing, which is also not typically the attractive look that people think about when they drive along that corridor, but fencing is available as another mitigation measure. And so I know the town of Jupiter is looking at putting in some fencing between, I think it's Center Street and Tony Penna, or along that section. So fencing is another option that's available. Different types of fencing. And you can also add things like bougainvillea, as the FRA has advised, to make the fencing really unpleasant to try to get in and cut. But that we only have so much control over that, because what we find in lots of places is where people naturally are crossing the track midpoint. So there's a goat path, let's say, and people are used to going from where their house is to the closest point to get to the store. They're going across the corridor. And if, when you put in a fence, that fence typically just gets cut over time. So it's unfortunate, but it's not a consistent safety measure that can be relied upon. That's why, we really try to focus on the grade crossings to do our best job with that and awareness. So, okay.
Thank you, Dr. Delaney. I see no more questions. So I think we are thoroughly covered on the subject.
Thank you.
I find it interesting. There must be a contest of congressional legislative aides to come up with names of legislation. I was looking at the RAISE program, and they come up with these acronyms, and it's Rebuilding American Infrastructure with Sustainable Equity. So that's what RAISE stands for, a little sniglet for you. I'm wondering, as we get to this next subject, the 5-6-1 plan, how much it was 5-6-1 roadways, or how many we squeezed or added on to make it a 5-6-1 plan overview. But that being said, we're going to invite Mr. Reinhardt up to explain to us the 5-6-1 plan as it's going to be impacted by the 2045 long-range planning transportation plan.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Good morning, everybody. My name is James Reinhardt. I'm the lead planner transit coordinator for the Palm Beach TPA. I'm going to be providing an update to the 5-6-1 plan. So as a quick reminder for everybody in the room, the TPA's mission and vision is to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund a safe and efficient and connected multimodal transportation system. That mission and vision helps guide us as we are doing the planning process for our long-range transportation plan, as well as amending our TIP and moving forward on additional projects such as corridor studies that we have done for part of the 561 plan. As part of the long-range transportation plan that we adopted recently, we completed an evaluation of our transportation system to identify key corridors for enhanced and frequent transit service, ped and bike safety, and first and last mile connections, which we titled the 561 plan. And that 561 plan consists of five north-south corridors, two being commuter rail and three being roadway corridors, six east-west corridors, all of those are roadway corridors as well, and which develops that one connected system. Of course, Vice Chair stepped out right as I hit that punchline on the what the 561 stands for, but I guess he can listen in the recording. And so why we chose these corridors? The first reason is with the help of SFRTA and PalmTran, we identified these corridors had the highest transit ridership in our existing service. And then within 2 miles of these corridors, 69% of the county's population and 94% of non-farming jobs existed in these areas. In addition to that, they were identified as part of the 2045 Regional Transportation Plan as key corridors to connect throughout the South Florida region by accessing PalmTran and TriRail, which will provide access to Broward County Transit and then Miami-Dade Transit, and of course Brightline as well once their service comes back online. And so why, now that we've discussed why, or a refresher of what those corridors are and why we selected them, so far what we've been working on to turn this plan from just lines on a map into actual physical projects, we have completed a US-1 corridor study in 2017 and into 2018 that identified a mixed BRT or bus rapid transit service on US-1 as the recommended alternative for transit enhancement. Since then, we have prioritized project engineering funds to start working on the enhanced transit stations existing within FDOT right-of-way, and then also the construction of transit signal priority at the intersections along that corridor. In addition to transit improvements, we've also looked at roadway improvements, which is we prioritized construction funds for reconstruction in Riviera Beach and Lake Park, and then lane repurposing or project engineering funds for lane repurposing in both Boca Raton and North Palm Beach. In addition to the work that's being done on US-1, there's been a lot of activity on the FEC railway. FDOT completed their Northwood crossover that connects the FEC to the CSX railways in Palm Beach County. Brightline, as we discussed in the past presentation, that Brightline is working on phase two to double track the corridor so that there can be more capacity for both freight and passenger rail moving through Palm Beach County. And soon there's going to be the construction of a Brightline station in Boca Raton. That's a $46 million project. $10 million was contributed by the city of Boca Raton with $16.4 million from an FRA CRISI grant. And as was mentioned in the executive director's report, there is a CEFTEC workshop on April 30th from 9:30 a.m. till noon to discuss the future of commuter rail on the coastal link throughout South Florida. So if you want to register, there's the link to that as well as in the director's report. And so what we're going to be working on soon with part of the 561 plan is the Okeechobee Boulevard and State Road 7 multimodal corridor study. We anticipate to kick off this study in spring of this year so that we can have our advisory meetings and public outreach in summer and fall, so that by the end of the year, we'll have a roadway and transit alternatives as well as a land use analysis completed to be able to share with this group at the end of the year, beginning of 2022. So for the next steps for the 561 plan, we're going to continue looking at the corridors that were identified and completing multimodal corridor studies so that the roadway owners can do design and feasibility and the transit agencies creating a detailed transit and operations analysis. But as those are happening for each of the corridors, as we're going from one to the next, we need to be continuing to discuss how we're going to pursue funding for these We have federal and state funds available for transit enhancements and improvements, but as our colleagues down in Broward and Miami-Dade County have noted, that they've been able to acquire local funding for transit improvements or transportation improvements, to be more clear. And we just need to continue that discussion so that we can turn these corridor studies and design and design feasibility and transit analysis into implemented projects. And that's what I have so far for this morning. Are there any questions?
And then for the board, since the vice chair did step out, I did want to note for the record that we do not have any public comments on this item. And I'm not
Thank
sure.
You.
Yeah.
We have a council member Koretsky.
Question, but you know, first I make a comment. You know, this, what I love about this, which is why I feel compelled to make sure I fully understand its scope, is this is, you know, our focus on transit and what have you. So looking at the scale of this, I know I can go back and review my past notes for meetings, but how far does US 1 corridor go? Where does it end?
It stretches the entire length of the county. We, as part of that corridor study, we set it up into a couple of different phases. And so right now we're looking at implementing recommendations on segments that are pending support from local communities. And that's where we are looking at that. There is a section that's part of phase two in that corridor study that goes up into North County between North Lake and Indian Town Road. And that one, we did not have a recommended alternative, transit alternative on that section because of the land use not supporting the investment based on the recommendations that were shown in the south part.
And I represent Jupiter, so I represent that section, which is why I was asked. I know that was being studied, but then further, I also think living at the far end north, that we should be aware of, make sure we're all aware of linkages to the north, because that's what's important. We have a lot of people commuting down into Palm Beach County from the north. So the fact that we work with, you know, Broward and Dade, we always are mindful of the interconnection south, but we're not mindful enough as we should be with the interconnections to the north. Since my daytime employer is FPL, NextEra Energy, I happen to be aware of truly mechanisms on connecting to the north, but I do think it should always be in the forefront of our minds, because when you say, you know, that there's not enough there to support it, well, there is when we're thinking about connectivity, you know, to the north and from the north coming south. So I think we're missing the boat there. I thought it wasn't, you know, I looked at the map. I know it's the scale that, you know, I printed out, but it did appear like it didn't go, US 1 didn't go as far as Jupiter. And I think that's wrong to have that. This is a 2045 plan, right?
Yes.
I didn't realize, Nick, that it doesn't go that far.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We're slowly losing our quorum here, so we're going to move along. Mayor, you have a comment?
Just in regards to the 561 plan, is that the multimodal aspect of it. I know that we talked about the trains and buses. I just want to make sure that we're also considering the last mile of the ways that people will walk, bike, or do ride sharing from those locations. You know, we are more in a grid format, not a wheel and or hub and spoke model, and except for West Palm Beach. So I just want to make sure that we identify how people get to where they need to go, not just to the center location.
Thank you, Mayor. All right. We are at a point now where we are going to not be able to take any action, any further items, but I would like to invite Clinton Forbes to come up for a moment. There is some legislation up in Tallahassee that has some impact on our transportation workers, Senate Bill 1014. And if you could give us a little bit of an update on what that is and how it's impacting your operations, certainly, would like to hear about that. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to take any action on this if there is an inclination to do that. But please.
Chair, we got 11 now.
We got our 11. Thank you for coming back, Mr. Peduzzi. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Clinton Forbes, the Executive Director of PalmTran. As you mentioned, there is some legislation that's being floated at the Senate and House in Florida. It's been, fortunately, temporarily postponed. I have Sean Hall here who will give a status on the legislation. But Senate Bill 1014 essentially threatens to restructure organized labor, with some exceptions to fire and police. There are several prohibitions that are deleterious to unions, specifically transit unions. And we're evaluating the level of impact financially, but there appears that there will be an impact in terms of funding, federal funding. So we have a laser focus on this issue, working with Todd Bonlaren and his staff, working with the Board of County Commissioners, really to oppose this. And in my other role, with my other hat, I am the chair of the Florida Public Transportation Association. We have an emergency meeting today to discuss this with, the 60 plus transit properties in Florida to jointly oppose this. But essentially, it makes it much tougher for unions to exist. Currently, union employees have their union dues deducted automatically from the payroll. This will require that to be eliminated and require employees to pay union dues directly. If a union, if they have not more than 50% of dues paying members, they have to recertify. And that has implications again with 13C and our federal funding. And it may impact employer protective agreements required to receive federal funding. So Sean, if you can just briefly give a status of where those bills are in the legislature.
Well, thank you, Clinton, and good morning, everyone. I'm Sean Hall, Manager of Governmental Affairs over at PalmTran. So this is one of those bills where, as you know, we're starting to get toward the end of session, and strike all amendments start to file onto these bills very quickly. So this bill is initially aimed at our K-12 instructional personnel and our Florida college system. Senator Baxley has just filed a strike all amendment, which essentially expands this to all public employees, which has come up on our radar and been raised by our union. So the bill wasn't considered at the most recent rules committee. It's actually not on the agenda for Friday. So we're going to be seeing, but rules, of course, is one of those Senate committees that tends to meet through the end of session. So on the House side, it is being heard in the State Affairs Committee. It was re-referenced, which kind of gives us pause that this might be something that's being pushed by leadership. So that strike all is being considered in the House as well to conform it with the Senate bill right now. So that's the current status of the bill as we see it. That may change, but we're keeping an eye out for it.
Thank you. And again, I want to be respectful of our members' time, but I think that this is important enough. And I think Commissioner Weiss may be asking for a letter to be written on behalf of the TPA. Commissioner Weiss.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so I'm asking, requesting that the TPA send a letter of opposition to these bills. I want to reiterate the point. This would put at risk a lot of federal funding, not only for our local transit authority, but all transit authorities in Florida. They will get, so we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars of lost revenues if, in fact, the state were to move forward with this. So I'm requesting that we write a letter. I'm also asking you to go back individually to your governments. We have already authorized our staff to send our opposition to this, and asking that you do the same as well. But I'll make a motion that we or direct staff to write a letter on our behalf.
Okay. Second. So We have a motion by Commissioner Weiss. I have a second by Mayor Grant, and I'll take any comments on the letter. The letter, the instruction would be for staff to work with Mr. Forbes to draft the letter and get it to the legislative delegation so that our position is known as on behalf of the TPA. I'm also going to ask that since a lot of our members aren't here, that that information is disseminated to the rest of the members of the TPA so they know the action that we're taking today. Mayor Grant?
I'm sorry to interrupt. I didn't get the seconder, so I had the motion was
Mayor
made.
Grant.
Thank you so much.
And yes, my city authorized me to go to Tallahassee for the end of the session. So if any assistance I can while I'm up there, please let me know.
Thank you. Okay, Commissioner Sachs.
Thank you very much. First, I'd like to recognize Sean Hall. You're doing a great job reading all about this legislative procedure. Secondly, I think it's imperative that everyone here and those who are not here receive a information about this. This is not just tied to unions. It's tied to federal funding. And I think that's whatever you may believe on unions or not, federal money is federal money. So we have received, on behalf of the County Commission, we've received information about the consequences of this bill. And I think that should be sent to everybody on this committee, whether or not they're here or not. And that definitely, if anybody has any displeasure with it, to let you be notified. But I think that time is of the essence. We should certainly get the letter out as soon as possible, because it does affect federal funding coming down to our governments. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. You're doing a great job too, Clint.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And seeing no further comments, you have any comments from the public?
I do have a hand raised, and I'm not sure if the hand was raised for the previous item when we closed the public comment period, because there were no hands raised before member discussion. However, I do have a Richard Stowe with his hand raised. So, Mr. Stowe, I can allow you to talk. You'll need to unmute on your end. You'll be allowed 3 minutes. I do need you to state your name and your address for the record.
And Mr. Stowe, we're going to ask you to restrict your comments to the specific item that's before us right now.
Yes. I'm Richard Stowe, and from Lake Worth Beach. I strongly support this letter that is in the motion to thwart the Florida legislature from restricting federal funds being disseminated into the state, and restricting the rights of unions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stowe. Are there any other comments, Margie?
No, Mr. Vice Chair. I just want to double check. I have no other hands raised.
Very good. So we have a Mr. Chairman. Sorry.
Just wanted to ask that the letter certainly emphasize the adverse impacts on federal funding. I mean, that's what's getting me to support it, you know, when you ask for a letter.
I think we can leave it to Mr. Forbes and our staff to draft the letter that incorporates that. Very good. All right, we have
Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
just
sir.
One point of personal privilege. I have to make it known. I did actually learn everything I learned about the Florida legislature because of Senator Sachs. At the time, I was had the opportunity to intern for her when I was at the University of Florida. So my hair is a little shorter now, but the knowledge is still there. So I attribute that to you. So thank you, Commissioner.
It's great to hear that some of that training is bearing fruit. With that being said, we have a motion, we have a second for a letter to be sent to the legislative delegation and committee chair on the Senate Bill 1014. Seeing no further comment, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you, everybody. All right, we'll go back to the regular agenda. And if you've noticed, we have a new person to my left. Nick had to depart for a 11 o'clock meeting. And so we will continue on with the partner agency updates. Are there any partner agencies that would like to provide an update? Didn't we see you up here once before, Mr. Forbes?
Well, that was one update. Just really quickly, just wanted to give you, Mr. Chair and members, again, Clinton Forbes, Executive Director of PalmTran, just a brief update on PalmTran amidst the end of the tunnel of this pandemic. So ridership took a turn for the better across all service modes, fixed route connection and Go Glades. From February to March, it increased just a little bit over 16%. And so we are thrilled about that. It's the first month that we're able actually to compare our ridership with during the pandemic, from pandemic to pandemic, from March 2020 to March 2021. And so we do see some increases in ridership. Also on our website, working with our county ISS department, we have developed a vaccination site locator. And it's interactive. And so if you go to our website and click, vaccinations, you'll see dots on the website. You click the vaccination site and it'll give you trip planning to that vaccination site. So it's been a pretty big hit with our customers. So for now, Mr. Chair, that concludes our update.
Thank you, Mr. Forbes. And you're looking very well. Nice to have you back.
Great to be back.
Okay. All right. We are dwindling, so we're going to make this quick. We have some administrative items here, but you can reference them at your leisure. They are in your notes. If you need additional information, I would ask you to contact Nick for updates. Margie, you have something?
Yes, I just wanted to note for the members present and those virtual. Mr. Stowe, I saw that you raised your hand again, but we do not recognize public comments during partner agency updates, so I did lower your hand. And then Mr. Vice Chair, for the administrative items, I can distribute. I did get a request for the item 3B, I'm sorry, 4B3 for the orientation handbook. I was asked to distribute that to the board members, so they had a digital copy, so we can include that in the follow-up email to all the board members.
Thank you very much, Margie. I'll let you know that we're going to be back together again on May 20th, 2021. And I thank you all for sticking with me to the bitter end. With that, we are adjourned.